This is Amiga Roundtable, Episode 5, for the week of July 29th, 2007. Butta finnas. And another episode is underway. I'm Rich Lawrence, your trusty host, and my trusty co-host, Sean Fitzgerald. Hello, Sean.
Rich, how are you? I'm very good, sir.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. And then also with us is Michael Blackburn, editor. You're editor of Amiga Guide. You're creator of Amiga Guide.
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Also with us, Robert Williams, author of Ammipotter. Hello.
Hello.
So we've come together once again to the roundtable to talk Amiga. And first off, let's talk about the city of Kent in Washington State. Officials are getting a little upset with Amiga. They're giving Amiga until Monday to cough up the $2.5 million promised for the down payment on the naming rights of the city's planned event center. Do we think Bill is going to come up with the cash or not?
No.
No. Quick and concise, huh?
I guess we'll see on Monday.
Yeah, I guess that's all we can do is wait till Monday. I mean, seriously, I was actually holding out hope. But I didn't think, you know, that any other outcome than what we're seeing right now would happen. I mean, I was hoping, I was praying Bill would come up with the money for this. But
I thought he would. He'd gotten himself into this, and it all seemed so well carried out, and everyone was smiling and cheering along and
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, it seemed to me like everybody in the community was starting to just, you know, come back up and say, you know, maybe Amiga's doing something. Finally, you know. Now it's like, eh.
What's going on?
Yeah. What do you guys think? You think we should have expected this, or?
I was going to say, I mean, I found it hard to understand why they would do it in the first place, really. It didn't seem like the sort of publicity strategy you would take after, you know, being in the doldrums for so long, yeah. Sort of thing. It seemed like a rather odd thing to do, but once you've done it and said you're going to, then, you know, this is going to be the worst possible form of publicity, doesn't it, if they then don't make good on their promise, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I really don't think that the city of Kent, you know, the Kent Reporter, I mean, I really don't think that helped things much either with, you know, their reporting of Amiga's financial issues either. So,
absolutely not. That's probably what's triggered all this.
Well, definitely. I mean, yeah, Kent wanted the money early because of all the reports, and Amiga said, "Well, wait a minute, let's talk about this." And you know, here we are now. So, and they've got a lawsuit pending and everything else. And
things cost money, and probably don't have everything just now. Yeah. Apparently, they offered a bit less or something.
That
was totally unacceptable. Apparently.
Yeah, that's what I read too. So, I mean, but the city of Kent, I guess, is I mean, it's not totally out in the cold. I mean, they've said that they can get another person, you know, another corporation or whatever to buy the naming rights.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like Amiga are going to come out very well out of it. Almost whatever happens now.
Yeah, that's true. They pretty much got the bad publicity, whether they wanted it or not.
Unless that's what they're feeling about it, they're feeling there's been so much bad publicity that they now don't think that even if they do come good, it'll be worth the money, sort of thing.
Moving on, SDL 1.2.12, they're pretty much taking out the Amiga drivers for that.
Yeah, they're removing support for Amigos because apparently it hadn't compiled for 2 years. There was an error somewhere. Oops.
What are you dropping?
I'm trying to destroy my mouse.
No.
It turns out they didn't have any way of testing if it did fix it. So I tried helping it out there a bit and sent them Amigos cross-compiling kit and some stuff like that. So. Apparently, I got in touch with some of the guys that work on SDL for Amigos, and hopefully, it'll be all right. If somebody will maintain it, it will be reinstated.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, I'm not. I'm not up in, you know, what's required. What's required or anything about the SDL stuff, really. But obviously, there's been a lot of SDL based games and things being compiled for OS4 and Morphos, etc. So. I assume that if the uh, if if the official support hasn't been working for some time. Presumably people have been finding a way around it. So maybe the official support isn't absolutely essential.
Yeah.
No doubt someone's going to step up to it, by the way folks are talking. So
maybe they'll get one of the guys who's already working on it sort of out of the official team to assist.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
I hope so. Apparently they are in contact and everything, and SDL is being used on both MorphOS and Amigos 3 and 4. So.
All right, well, let's move on to Aweb. New release 3.5.09 is now out. Improved JavaScript. Loads of bug fixes in there as well, and it's available for OS 3.whatever and 4.0. Anybody here using Aweb right now?
I occasionally do an OS 4. I must admit, I'm mostly an eyebrows man, but occasionally do an OS 4, and it's good to see developments continuing, of course, because it is OS 4 native rather than there's an OS 4 native version rather than eyebrows running under emulation, although the emulation works pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the JavaScript stuff's had a pretty major overhaul, so I'll perhaps give that a try and see whether it's working on more sites now.
Let's face it, I think what we'll probably be more likely to see, at least from the newer OSs, is from MorphOS or from OS 4, a Mozilla port. Unfortunately, as much as you got eyebrows and Aweb and they've done so much, keep prodding along for the community, let's face facts, eventually a port's going to materialize. Incidentally, Sputnik just got a revision. There's a posting on MorphZone. Looks sharp. Google is just perfect. So it looks like there's some advancements with Sputnik as well going on with the MorphOS side of things. Let's face it, it's probably, our usage on eyebrows and Aweb are probably going to deteriorate.
Yeah, sadly so. I mean, I think most Amiga users would like to see would be something that combines the interface of eyebrows or possibly even Aweb with, depending on your preference kind of thing, with the rendering engine of, Firefox or the WebKit-based one that Sputnik's using. But whether anybody will ever produce a library, and whether the based on one of those engines, and whether the teams behind Aweb or eyebrows will be interested rather than rolling their own kind of thing, I don't know. I get the impression the eyebrows team are interested in actually producing a sort of modern standards compliant engine themselves, but it's a it's a huge development effort.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if it takes them a while. I mean, obviously, like we were talking about last episode, Firefox, the AFX group working on the Firefox port for Amiga. Even if that happens, and we've got that modern browser there, I mean, still working on Aweb is still a good thing. I mean, there's always the variety. Variety is the spice of life, as they say. Yeah. So, the merrier.
Yeah. And I mean, I think if we end up with X11 based version, obviously that's going to be a huge step forward, and it'll allow people within Amiga OS to do a lot of things that we've not been able to do before.
Yeah.
But there'll still be demand for a proper native a browser with a native user interface, be it MUI or Reaction or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, don't let me take away from folks that don't have OS 4, MorphOS. I mean, there's always going to be a home and a place for Aweb and eyebrows. I didn't want to sound doom and gloom about the whole project, but to be quite an undertaking for them to just change their whole engine,
Yeah, one sort of slight bright side is that at least, although most CSS sites look pretty horrible without style sheets, at least most of the content is actually viewable, albeit in a rather ugly format, whereas when it looked like the world was going towards sort of Flash and things like that, where you just end up with nothing if your browser doesn't support it. So I mean, say for example, when I went to your site in eyebrows, it doesn't look very pretty.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But all the content's there.
Yeah.
And I could find the RSS feed, etc.
Let's move on to Epistula. We were talking about the name. That's a pretty neat name, but yeah, Epistula And the latest version is now out, which is 52.112. And if anybody's got a new mouse, please send it to Mike.
Some too, so I have one extra.
Yeah. But as a goodwill gesture, the author has also provided a public key file to download. So now you can use it without the, without a 10-minute timeout.
It looks really good. I must admit, from the screenshots, it looks he's done a done a nice job. Yes. He's got some great GUI design.
Oh, that's good. I'm sure somebody can get a lot of use out of this. I know I will if I ever get an OS 4 machine. So, moving on from there, let's head over to AmiKit, high-end classic Amiga on your PC. The new update is now available, and I believe, does it come in two flavors? Does it use 3.1 and 3.9 OS, or is it just 3.9?
It doesn't use 3.1. It uses 3.5 or 3.9.
3.5 and 3.9, okay.
Or some, I may also be able to use AmiAtlon or something like this. Amiga Forever also, actually.
Yeah, you need it's as you just said. Yeah, it says I'm just having a quick look at the website, and it says you need 3.5, 3.9. It'll also work with Amiga Forever or the Amiga XL, i.e. AmiAtlon CD installation, but it won't work with just OS 3.1.
There's no difference whether there's no benefit of going with Amiga OS XL or AmiAtlon or however you pronounce that, or Amiga Forever. It's irrelevant. As long as you have it,
yeah,
you can put on the AmiKit layer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. That's my understanding anyway, yeah.
It's basically like Amiga in a box.
I need to do it. I need to play around with it. I have yet to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I played around with Amiga in a box, and that was kind of cool. But, yeah, this AmiKit seems to be, and not to diss Amiga in a box, but, yeah, this AmiKit looks really, really up. Really up there.
Yeah,
so.
One of the I've not tried it myself, but Mick Sicky, who was also involved with Total Amiga in our user group here, he's just put it on his PC a few weeks ago, and he was saying it's absolutely fantastic. Gives you a really great out of the box experience kind of thing. Right. And it does it keeps itself automatically up to date, so people who've got it will be able to get this latest edition using the built in automatic update.
This is definitely talk about a guy that would be an interesting candidate for an interview. I don't know where he's from, but is this a one man job basically?
Yeah, it is. He's administrator on Amiga Web 2, so he does a lot of great work there. But he's from where's he from? We actually did an IRC session with him a while back, but I can't remember where he was from.
All right, Momos, IRC, brand new IRC client for Morph OS, an early version of the new IRC client, is up and ready for download. And I'm looking at a screenshot here of it, and it looks very nice. Does anybody here have Morph OS to run this, to try this? I don't. I know Sean wants it.
Soon we will. We all will be able to.
Yes, very soon.
Sean is brainwashed.
He's gone to the dark side.
No, but No.
We should go too because they have cookies. So,
but there.
I am definitely, if I ever get an Effica, which will be at some point with Morph OS, then this would definitely be something worth playing with. Of course, I mean, MiniMig goes open source. Mini Micro Amiga is open source now. All of it run on an FPGA chip or a series of FPGA chips, which are user programmable, so you can build your own mini MIG, which basically is the equivalent of an Amiga 500. How sweet is that?
It's great news. I've been watching this project since I first heard of it, or waiting for news about it.
Oh yeah.
But it sounded like it was an impossible little dream they had going there, but suddenly it turned up at some show and things ran on it, and now it's there.
Here's the thing. I can't remember his name, but wasn't the head of the project talking about at one point? Was he the one that was talking about maybe selling it off and then, as a kit or as a completed item, or was I thinking about something else or reading about something else?
I don't know. I've seen something like that long at last myself, but there's been.
I saw it demonstrated at the Big Bash show in the UK last year, I guess, and I think he was saying it was going to be open source, but I think he was considering maybe producing some boards for people. He said, I remember him saying at the time, I know his name's Dennis, I can't remember his surname, but anyway, he said he didn't want to get into producing it and having to support people and having a whole sort of organization, as it were. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to make it open source for that reason. I don't know what the open sourcing means to somebody who potentially might want to pick it up and produce it for sale, you know, how it works at that case, you know, whether they can only do it at cost. Can they make a profit out of it? I don't know how that all works.
I'm not sure. I think it would work along the lines, you know, like with all the Linux distros where you're still bound by the GPL or whatever, if that's what he's licensing it under. And then, you would have to provide the code for free. And then
you could sell it for $100 if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know? Or $2,000.
It seems a bit different with hardware, doesn't it? You know, with software, obviously the transfer costs are minimal, aren't they? But if you're actually selling the hardware, is there anything that means that they would have to give something back to Dennis, for example, or can you just go ahead and produce it and sell it for whatever you like? I don't know.
I think it would have to be however Dennis licenses it. I mean, whether he wants to do it like a Creative Commons, or if he just wants to say, look, if you want to. You know, I make the boards. If you want the hardware, you pay me. You know, you can make it yourself, but you got to pay me a fee or something like that per board or whatever. You know,
I don't think there's any requirement from a legal standpoint of whether or not he would have to be owed money.
Let's move on our list to Linux 2.6.22 for Amiga. The kernel, that kernel is out for the Motorola 68K to maintain distribution of Debian. For that particular processor, the classic processor from the Amiga. So, has anybody even tried to at all put Linux on one of their classic machines?
I've done it with a Mac SE30 before.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd it work?
But that was years ago.
Oh
no, there's an interview candidate if I ever heard one. If you're compiling 2.6.22 kernel right now, give us a screenshot and. Come on the show and talk to us about it.
Yeah, tell us about.
Just time it.
Yeah, tell us all about it and let us know how easy
we
or hard
or difficult.
We want
to count the users.
Yes.
We want the movie.
Yeah.
Of you compiling a kernel.
And Sean will probably write about you on his blog too. So there you go. All right, moving on. Smart File System 1.273 update now available. It's free. Very efficient alternative file system for Amiga OS 3 and 4. Pretty slick, huh?
That's cool. It kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, just zing. Nobody heard anything about it. And AMI DVD is now out, version 1.3.1. So you can play all your ISO 9600 DVDs and burn them and everything you could possibly want for OS 4.
That one came completely out of the blue to me when I saw you. You mentioned the news item before the show because I hadn't heard of this at all. But it's done by the same guy who maintains SFS. Interestingly,
yeah, there's also in the story notes for it. There's a workaround for a bug in SFS, which creating image files greater than 2 gigabytes. It'll work, and then on FFS2 partitions as well. That's pretty handy. I mean, you work on SFS, you know, and you do AMI DVD, and you fix the problem that you have, so you know it's going to work. So
yeah, sounds if it would be really handy especially if you just want to do backups to data DVD backups and things like that. Sounds like it's got all the features you need to do that.
Yeah, let's see.
Very simple.
That's it. Well, that's all I've got on my list here. Anybody got anything that they want to throw into the mix that we can pull apart, talk about, whatever?
Isn't there I saw something on was it Amiga World where there's this German Amiga music Commodore music festivity occurring August 18th?
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I just read that. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Commodore.
That would be awesome. I wish I could go to Germany. I'd love to see what this is all about. Well, it sounds really interesting.
We'll invite them to the international kegger. How's that?
Yes, no doubt. Listen, we'll hold it in Germany.
That's it. Well, I was, I've got ideas, but I'll tell you about it off the air. I don't want to, you know, I want to be true Amiga and just talk about it and not actually release any details. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, man, somebody's got to hold the line here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, if that's I think that's pretty much it for the news then. Why don't we head into segment two then, where we give the third degree to Robert about Amy Potter and a couple other things that he's got going on. Is that cool with you, Robert?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
All right, why don't we do that then? All right, so stick around for segment two. We're going to be back with Robert Williams, author of Amy Potter. We're going to talk to him about Amy Potter and whatever else we can drag out of the conversation. Stay tuned. Michael Blackburn, Sean Fitzgerald, and I'm Rich Lawrence.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
And we are back for our second segment. I'm Rich Lawrence, Sean Fitzgerald, Michael Blackburn, and with us, special guest, Robert Williams, author of Amy Potter. And I'm sure we've all got a bunch of questions. Seeing how this is a podcast, Robert, I'm sure a lot of us are going to have questions for you about how we can get Roundtable to come up like first in all the settings. Maybe like, you know, have a demo set up where we are the first thing in there. Is that quite possible? I mean,
well, you might be able to twist my arm. You never know. at the moment, it's got Adam Curry, who, as you probably know, is one of the podcast pioneers, shall we say?
But it's not Amiga.
There's some debate as to whether he was really the first.
But it's not Amiga.
But he was also a hairspray pioneer, too, I think.
King of the mullets. That's it. King of the mullets. Yeah. I remember watching him on
MTV. Well, I was going to say, I mean, it's been great that your show started, because up till now, we've not really had a good talk sort of Amiga podcast. There have been a few guys doing, you know, mods and things like that, which is, you know, good, cool to listen to, but it's nice to have a proper show. So, you never know. Maybe in the next version.
Okay. All right. That'd be neat. All right. So which version are you up to with Amy Potter? What version number are you up to so far?
Right. I'm up to 1.6, which I released, I guess it's about a month ago now. Mm-hmm. And 1.7 is, it was supposed to be a quick release to fix a few bugs and get it out. But as ever, it's already about a month has already gone.
Sounds like our recording schedule here. So,
hopefully, it'll be out fairly soon.
That's good. Are there any new features going to be coming out in the next update, or is it just basically like mostly bug fixes?
No, we've got some. I've got some new features. It's going to have support for feeds that need authentication. So there are a few podcasts where you can subscribe to a paid feed and get sort of more shows or more content or whatever. Oh. And so it's going to support authenticated feeds for that. One of the main problems people have had is because it's Amy Potter is actually an AREX based program, and it needs quite a few libraries and things to work, because it uses MUI and it uses some custom classes, and it uses a great product called RX MUI that allows you to do MUI interfaces in AREX. So I've done quite a lot of work on the requirements checking and things, so that hopefully people will get a nice list of what it needs rather than an error message in this version.
Now which versions of the Amiga OS is it available for? Is it for the classics?
Right, well, it should work on anything after OS 3, which I think is the earliest version that RX MUI supports, and it works on OS 3, OS 3.5, 3.9, OS 4 and on Morphos as well.
Oh, okay. So, now, any plans to port it over to AROS?
Well, it's all down to whether they have AREX support or not. I don't believe they do, and because AREX is a closed source library, which I don't believe even Hyperion had the source for, because the guy who originally wrote it, William Hawes, had a dispute with Commodore. So it wasn't further developed from OS3, I believe. So I don't think it's likely, unless somebody puts in the work to create a compatible version for AROS. I guess that's rather unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Actually, there is work going on with a free implementation of RX script in AROS, but I don't know how far they've come.
Yeah, I mean, that's good to hear. I mean, as I say, Amipoda does use a number of kind of like add-on libraries for AREX, mostly there, as I said, RX MUI, and there's a whole collection of add-on libraries that a guy called Alfonso Ranieri has created. And I mean, they are absolutely fantastic and really good for, you know, it allows you to do so much more in AREX. So unless they were all ported over as well, I don't think it could work. So unfortunately, I think it's probably fairly unlikely.
Yeah. What about future plans for Amipoda? Where are you hoping to bring it up into a development? I mean, develop it into, I should say. Where do you want to take it?
In general, it's fairly at the moment. I wrote it mostly for my own benefit, as these things tend to happen. So at the moment, it pretty much does what I want it to do. So I'm open to suggestions from users, which I get. Most of the things I add are requests. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any sort of huge plans. It works with most or all the feeds that I've tried it with. Mm-hmm. Everything seems to be pretty much reasonably stable, and everything, once you've got all the right components anyway. And I don't have any huge plans, but I am very open to suggestions. So if people ask, I normally try and add. I mean, one of the things I didn't mention that I've just added in version 1.6 is I had quite a few requests to give it locale support, so it could be translated into other languages.
Oh yeah,
and so I added that in 1.6, and it's already been. I've already got two great translators who've done German and Italian localizations, and I've got a French localization underway someone's doing for me for version 1.7. So that's really nice. And you were saying earlier in one of the news items about how nice it is when you as a user get in touch with a programmer and they're able to put in your request. Equally, when you program something, it's absolutely great to get feedback and find that people are really using it and finding it useful.
Anybody else got anything?
Well, I was wondering if you've been approached by any other developers to incorporate it into their MP3 playing programs like Amiga Amp or AmigaNet Radio. And,
it kind of works the other way around at the moment, in that you can configure it to use the player that you want, and then so when you can view your feeds in Amipoda, once it's downloaded the episodes, you can play them directly within Amipoda, and it will launch your player of choice that you've configured. I think because it's written in AREX, most of the players are probably C programs, so it wouldn't be very easy for them to directly incorporate it, as it were. I don't know whether any of the... I know the new skinned version of TuneNet seems to be going much more towards the sort of... I'm sure iTunes-y music management, shall we say, way. Yes. So maybe they're considering that that functionality. I was quite expecting. I mean, as I say, I'm not really much of a coder, really. As I say, you probably wouldn't normally tackle that sort of a project in AREX. It's not really ideal for it, but that's what I know. So so that's what I ended up using, which is probably not the best way of doing these things. But there you go.
You've accomplished something great. It's a great looking. It works really well. It's something that was needed. And kudos to you.
Well, I was quite expecting, to be honest, that you know, soon after I'd brought it out, somebody would produce you know, one written in C and much faster and you know, slicker, as it were. But that hasn't happened. So, yeah.
So I wouldn't expect it, Robert.
So I've continued working on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect anybody to come out with a C version, because they probably sat back. Oh, somebody already came out with that. Yeah, I'm done. You can do it.
The nice thing about doing a C version would be if you could use one of the existing XML parsing libraries that I believe are available. You know, the open source type ones. Because I had to write the XML parser in AREX, and it's not really ideal. That's the main kind of like performance issue. Really, it's a bit slow parsing the XML.
Right.
It's the sort of thing where, because you can leave it on automatic and you can just leave it to get on with it, sort of thing, it doesn't really matter too much.
I think
I might be slightly, because I run it on my Amathlon machine that's pretty fast. I'm not sure what it's like on a 68K machine. It's probably a bit slow. But.
Now, does it support? I'm sure there's probably no specific driver for any specific MP3 player. It just uses a basic. Mass storage device USB.
Yeah, that's
access.
Right. It supports any MP3 player that will play songs just copied onto it via like mass storage. Yeah,
okay.
By Workbench or whatever. So and you can set one up. You know, set up the device name that you want it to copy to, and what directory you want to copy it to on that device. And then you've just got, once it's downloaded the podcast, you've just got a button that you click, and it will copy all the new ones across automatically, and it remembers which ones it's copied, so it only copies the new ones. If you've got an MP3 player with a limited amount of storage, you can look at all the new ones you've downloaded and select them. And as you select them, it'll there's a bar gauge that shows you how much of the space you've filled, so you can pick a selection that'll fit on your MP3 player.
You know, the other thing that's neat is some of the scripts you have developed or are working on. If we could change gears a bit, Rich, if you've looked at some of the other things he's been working on or has released, like Flare, which is an AREX script that allows you to play Flash. Have you ever? Maybe Mike's played with it, with the Flash videos, like YouTube. You can view YouTube videos on Aweb and MPlayer. That's pretty cool.
I've heard about it, but I haven't played around with it. I don't have a fast enough Amiga for it right now.
You really need the either. I'm assuming it works on Morphos. I don't know, but you really need the OS4 version of MPlayer to support the Flash videos. Unfortunately, I don't think any of the 68K players support them. So
we'll support it, right?
Yeah, I wrote that Flare for, and it uses Aweb. And I'll just in case anyone's interested, there's also another script written by someone else on OS4 Depot that works with eyebrows as well. So we had one of those great minds think alike type moments where I used that, and they were working on the eyebrows version. So I think we both were inspired by another guy who actually wrote an original script for eyebrows, kind of thing. So but it's quite nice. It's quite nice, especially if you don't have any other machines, but you do have an OS4 machine, or as I say, possibly a Morphos machine. I'm not sure. It does allow you to view. So when you see one of those links on Amiga World, and it says, this great video on YouTube, at least you can see it.
The other one that I see that you're working on, something in the works, is a PayPal aid. That, you know, hey, there's a need. You know what I mean? That's probably going to be very useful for many folks wanting to be able to utilize PayPal with their Amiga.
Yeah, well, I wrote that because, as you know, in a past life now, I was editor of Total Amiga, and I handled right. all the Total Amiga magazine, and I handled all the orders, and we would have the orders come in through PayPal. And I must have been one of the things on the to-do list for all 8 years that we were publishing the magazine was to have an automated web ordering service, but I never actually got round to it. So I just dealt with. So when the emails came in, I wrote a little script that would pull out the bits from the PayPal email and present them in an easier to handle format, so then I could just easily copy and paste bits into our database system. So yeah, there are a few things on there that I've said really that you know, they're written and they work, but I've not written any documentation. They're not really in a releasable state. And if anyone's interested, if they send me an email, you know, a couple of emails from people who would actually use it would probably be enough to persuade me to get up and actually write the docs and get them into a state where they can be released. yeah, there are a couple of things like that. So if anyone hears this and thinks, yeah, that sounds useful, write me an email and I might actually get them released.
Robert, thank you so much for being on today's show. I mean, Amy Potter is a great program, and all the other little programs that you put together are just as fantastic. And thank you so much from the community for contributing so much. You know, so many useful things that we can use. Thank you.
Well, no problem. And I say thanks very much for producing this podcast, because I think, you know, it's really great. And I say I've been waiting almost ever since I started AmiPodder for something like this to come along. So I'm really, really pleased you're doing it.
Oh, that's...
And so I guess we could say perhaps that at one point, if you started a podcast yourself, Robert, you would have been almost the king of all Amiga media.
I did at one point almost consider doing it, but just because I thought, come on, we've got to have an Amiga. I mean, a bit mean. I'm a bit of a speech radio sort of fanatic, so
we beat you to the punch. Eh?
Yeah, yeah, and you know. No, go ahead, Robert.
Go on. You say, go on.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the whole podcast idea was just an off the cuff thing by me. I had been wanting to do podcasting for a while, and I couldn't think of anything. And I, you know, for a subject to talk about, because I, you know, ham radio has been so done. There's tons of ham radio ones out there, and I kept thinking, well, maybe Amiga. But I kept thinking to myself, you know, the community's small. There probably wouldn't be that big a response, that kind of thing. And then I did it, the first episode. Sean and I did it, and it just seemed to snowball. So, and the response we've been getting has been fantastic. So, and Amy Potter is definitely. I mean, it's kind of like the yin and yang. I would think you've got the client, we've got the content, and it just meshes together perfect. So I think that's one of the cool things.
That's right. I mean, the great thing about podcasting is that with AmiPodder or another podcast client, obviously, you know, depending on what machine you're using or whatever for that sort of thing, is that you can put together a whole mishmash of podcasts about different topics, and you end up with this sort of customized radio station either on your computer or on your MP3 player that just plays the programs or music or whatever that you're really into. So I think it's a really great thing.
Well, thank you once again for being on the show, Robert. We really appreciate you being on, and I know it was a little rough getting you on here with all the reschedules and everything, but thanks for holding out and coming on the show. I know we're very happy to have had you on, and this is going to be another great show thanks to you. So thank you very much.
No problem at all. Thanks very much.
All right. Stick around. We'll be wrapping things up here in just a moment. Mike Blackburn, Sean Fitzgerald, and our special guest, Robert Williams, author of Amy Potter. Stick around. I'm Rich Lawrence. Hi, Rich Lawrence from Amiga Roundtable here. Have you been by the new Amiga Z website yet? You haven't? Well, you should. We've redesigned it and added some new features. You can now rate episodes of Amiga Roundtable, as well as vote in our polls to tell us how to make Amiga Roundtable better. Plus, show links for all the episodes in one convenient list and a little info about the podcast itself. So go ahead, stop on by, check it out. www.amigaz.org. Catch you next episode. That wraps up another episode of Amiga Roundtable. I want to thank Robert Williams, author of Ammipotter, for being our guest. Stop by the Ammipotter website at www.ammipotter.com. If you have any comments or questions about Amiga Roundtable, stop by our website at www.amigaz.org, or you can email them to us at amigaroundtable@gmail.com. Amiga Roundtable is a production of AmiZ Studios and the Amiga Z BBS. For my co-hosts Sean Fitzgerald and Mike Blackburn, I'm Rich Lawrence. Thanks for listening.